WTBQ. Hello and welcome to Shannon's Corner. I am Shannon Devereaux Sanford, and thank you so much for joining us here today on your favorite radio station, WTBQ. And don't forget, we are now 93.5 FM as well as our very faithful 1110 AM. And I hope you're doing well today. The news has certainly been really abrasive is a good word probably for it. It's certainly hard to take with all these shootings and all this stuff last week. And then obviously in Kenya, which of course is not in our backyard, but it's just more violence that we constantly hear about. We're going to talk about that today because one of the interesting Gallup surveys that just came out September 20th is that Americans fault the mental health system most for gun violence. And that's an interesting place to point the blame. I mean, is it the mental health system? A lot of people think it's guns. Well, actually, in this poll, guns come after the mental health system and then drug use and then violence in movies and video games. So certainly the blame lies at the fact that we have all these people maybe walking around with all these health problems and they can't get any help. And health is either help is either expensive or unavailable, or maybe we can't commit someone else. I mean, these are all issues I want to talk about today with one of my favorite guests. Dr. Kathy Seifert is a forensic psychologist, and she specializes in family trauma and youth violence. She is an author of two books, How Children Become Violent and Youth and Violence. And she also has a blog on Psychology Today called Stop the Cycle, and you might have seen her on CNN or Fox News or other places like that. She certainly is an expert and knows what she's talking about, and we want to pick her brain and ask her some of these questions. And I want to welcome Dr. Kathy Seifert to Shannon's Corner. How are you today?
I am wonderful. Thank you, Shannon, for having me back. I always love being on your show.
Thank you so much for joining us. And we love having you because you can really shed some light on this. If the majority of Americans feel that the health system is to blame for violence, what does that say to you? What is so wrong with our mental health system that that's where we put the blame for all these shootings?
Well, I think that is so interesting. I had not heard that statistic, but I think that's partially right. I think our mental health system certainly needs a lot of additional funding, but it also needs procedural differences. And so I go back to a time when the ability to involuntarily put someone in the hospital who was dangerous was easier than it is today. We changed the rules and made it very, very difficult to keep somebody in the hospital. It was a matter of individual rights, and I understand that. But I think we have to have a new dialogue about when someone is dangerous. Where is that line between letting them be in the community with no services or involuntarily requiring that they be in services?
So what you're saying is for, you know, people like the guy in Washington that went into the Navy Yard and shot all these people, he was hearing voices. If someone around him, which they knew, if they could say, look, I got a problem here. This guy's hearing voices. Now, obviously, if there's something wrong with you, you are not necessarily going to commit yourself because you just don't see it that way. So, but his family members can't do that, can they now?
Well, they can take a person to the emergency room or have the police take them to the emergency room. But here's the second part of the problem in terms of mental health in the United States. Forensics is where mental health and the law and dangerousness cross over. And so mental health has generally, they've treated people who have mental health issues, and we're not as aware of what we need to do to help people who are dangerous. And so our ability to assess who is dangerous and who is not that's in the mental health population really is behind the times. And it's an area that needs to be improved in the United States.
So are you saying in the mental health system or in our, like, if we know someone, how would we assess them? I mean, you know, for the average person, if they see someone that they think might be a danger to someone else, can they do anything? Can we assess it as a parent, a family member, a church member, or whatever? I mean, you know, once they get in the system, I realize it's tough, but getting them in there is even tougher. Can the average person do anything to get someone into the system?
No. They can encourage them to go see somebody. They can help them go see somebody, but they cannot force them to go see somebody. Now, if they actually do something that breaks the law, then they can get them in to see somebody. But we saw the problem with the Navy Yard shooting. His violations, his behavior problems, flew below the radar. But really, he was a person that was at high risk to do this because it's the chronicity. It's getting into trouble over and over and over again and misusing firearms and getting into arguments and not doing well at work. Those are the risk factors for violence.
Those
and
are the risk factors?
We're not recognizing that in this country.
Well, that's interesting. So those are the risk factors for violence. For our listeners, tell us some of the other risk factors for violence in big violence like this. I mean, I don't mean just a small, you know, go kick the cat sort of thing, but, you know, something that could result in some harming other people. What are signs to look out for?
Well, there appear to be two groups of people that are at risk for big violence, like we saw at the Navy Yard. One group is chronically violent their whole life, even though it may not be a huge violence, but just that low-level aggression and violence and not getting along with people and not doing well at work, and it's chronic. And then it starts getting more and more severe, and it's escalating, and maybe they have mental illness, maybe they don't, but they need to get to treatment, and our ability to get them to treatment is lacking, especially if it's against their will. And that's where our problem in the system is, I believe. We have to have a new conversation about getting dangerous people into treatment against their will. But to do that, we have to know how to accurately assess who's dangerous and who's not. The second group of folks who are at risk for dangerousness are folks that are severely mentally ill, they're psychotic, and they're not in treatment, and they have lost their support systems, the people who usually help them manage life, like we saw the Colorado Theater shooting. He had gone away to school. Probably at home, his family helped structure his day, but he went away to school and he didn't have those supports and he was mentally ill and he wasn't in treatment. And then something happened that was such a blow to him that he fell apart.
You know, this every time we talk about this, we always talk about him. This is always more men than women, isn't it?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, we don't hear women doing this. Do we have better coping mechanisms? I mean, men seem to, I have a friend who has a family member who every time he gets angry, he's always talking about killing people and doing this and And I don't know him, so I don't think, but according to her, she doesn't think he'll do anything. And I think, but isn't that how it starts? That anger that builds up. And it seems to be only men that want to say, I want to kill someone. I mean, as opposed to just, I'm mad at them.
Right. And you're right. It is primarily men that have that overactive anger, but it's the inability to cope with life's problems and the anger getting out of control that makes the difference. And yes, it is primarily men. I read something one time that says, if we do not allow our boys to cry tears, they will cry bullets.
Oh, that's a stark statement, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's a very graphic.
And I think it's true. We need to be better at helping men and boys be able to express their feelings in ways other than aggression.
Yeah, well, that goes back to needing to educate boys earlier and differently than women, because they are very different. I mean, Michael Gurian, who I've had on here many times, talks about that often, as you probably know. And a lot of this does happen in schools, right? I mean, this is the first place that people need to look at this. If you have a young boy who's angry and says things like, I want to kill people, obviously that should be a red flag. I mean, is that just boy behavior?
Yeah, that's a red flag, and it should be evaluated. And one of the things I've started to talk about is it a little problem that will resolve itself, or is it a great big problem? And that's where I think we need to look. You've got a little boy saying, I'm going to kill you, and he's in the second grade.
Mm-hmm.
You need to know, is that just mouthing off, a little problem that with a little bit of education will resolve itself? Or is this a big, deep-seated problem that needs professional help? And you can identify these kids early in life. If you have a kid who's in school beyond the first grade and is aggressive multiple times, that child needs to be evaluated.
Mm-hmm. And do you think this aggression, if a parent's listening, again, it goes back to, well, that's just boy behavior, but it crosses the line when it's continually aggressive. Do you think they're learning this through violent videos? I mean, this is something everybody talks about often, but the statistics show that that's really not the case. Yet many feel that that can't be true. If you constantly see it in a video game, you want to act it out. What's your opinion on that?
Well, there are two things that are higher predictors of violence later on than video games, and that is seeing violence in the home. Being a mother abused by a father is one of the largest risk factors. Being abused or neglected as a child, some kind of severe trauma in early childhood that begins to show up when the child enters school.
Mm-hmm.
Those are really the big risk factors. And what I've seen over the years is children who see abuse at home, it's almost like they're addicted to seeing more and more of it. So they see it at home, then they watch it on the video games. And again, it's just something that gets worse and worse.
You know, my first thought is, of course, that's obviously true. And then I think probably 100 years ago, that was true, too. But we didn't see it acted out so violently,
right,
and so excessively, and maybe on the big stage of the TV and the media. Maybe that gives them more incentive to do it and get the attention they're so desperately seeking. So, I mean, that's probably part of it, because there's been guns in homes, and I'm not pro-guns, but there's certainly been guns in homes for many years on farms.
Oh.
This is nothing new. So, but we, you know, I think it was the statistics said, you know, for the first 50 years of this country, there was maybe two of these a year, if that.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, you know, it's just grown so much. So it has to be something else. You know, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about that. And I want to see if you think that Obamacare is going to make a difference in healthcare. And I want to talk what makes a terrorist. We are talking with Dr. Kathy Seifert, who is an expert in violence and youth trauma. And we're going to be back in just a few on WTBQ.
Mike O'Brien, welcome to the Blarney Station.
Hi, John. What do you recommend from the menu today?
Well, Mike, we got fried pickles, coconut shrimp, pine island kielbasa served with homemade bacon pierogies and Shay's Irish curry or chicken fried steak.
Well, what about the Irish specialties?
Well, we got Irish nachos, shepherd's pie, fish and chips, corned beef Reuben, or even a pastrami Reuben.
Well, I heard the Irish nachos are great. And how about an order of shepherd's pie? I know you have takeout orders, too. What's your phone number?
845-986-1509. That's 845-986-1509.
And where exactly are you located?
We're at 10 Railroad Avenue in beautiful Warwick, New York.
That's across from the railroad green?
You got it, Mike. The Blarney Station, the only stop that counts.
It's not the kind of thing we like to talk about, but some of us have to deal with it. Families coping with a terminal illness. What to do and how? Hospice of Orange and Sullivan Counties is here for your family, holding your hand through this darkness with dignity.
Hospice helped Grandpa in his time of need. They made sure all the necessary medications were taken. When he was able, Hospice took Grandpa to look outside his favorite window. Hospice gave Grandma that much-needed break each day and helped her understand the impending death of her husband. Most of all, they made Grandpa feel comfortable. Thanks, Hospice.
Hospice of Orange and Sullivan Counties makes things easier on the ones you love. Whenever your family is faced with making one of life's toughest decisions, speak with Hospice.
Hospice is about comfort and compassionate care. Call Hospice of Orange and Sullivan today at 561-6111 or go to hospiceoforange.com. Caring, comfort, and compassion for 25 years. And counting.
If you missed the Frank Truett Show, here's what you missed.
On the telephone with us this morning, we do have Terry Labonte and Dr. Stephen Lamb. Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Terry, obviously the NASCAR drivers are always involved in helping out charities, and they do really a lot that people don't even see. Why did you get involved in this Drive for Five campaign?
You know, I just felt like it was important that, I know how guys are, but it just really doesn't make much sense to go out here and really take care of your car and then not take care of your body. Mm-hmm. You know, you can always get another car. You only got one body.
The Frank Truett Show, weekday mornings till 9 on WTBQ.
Hello, this is Ken Ford.
And I'm Mark Lang. Tune in at 10 a.m. every Friday to expand your financial knowledge as we discuss the week's economic events and how they impact you and your wallet on Wall Street to Main Street on WTBQ.
WTBQ. Hello and welcome back to Shannon's Corner. I am Shannon Devereaux-Sanford, and thank you so much for listening to us today. And don't go anywhere, because we're talking about a subject that's talked about a lot, about violence in America. And we're talking with Dr. Kathy Seaford, who is an expert on this. She's been featured on Fox News, CNN, and other places. She has a blog on Psychology Today. Go to Shannon's Corner, and there's a direct hot link to that, to her website and to her blog. She has written a few books about youth and violence and what makes our kids violent. And, you know, kids grow up to be adults, and then they do things. And if they're not, if we don't look at this, the mental health issue, then it's going to escalate into something really awful for everyone. So we've got to get it while they're young, or at least be able, I think, to get it while you can see it and put them someplace, you know, get them some help. I mean, not necessarily lock them away, but get people help that need help. Before we took a break, we were talking about how the bigger stage, I think, the more media stage. Do you think that this fuels some of this? Because, as I said, you know, guns have been around for many years, and why are we seeing them acted out in such a violent way? You know, killing, it seems to me that, you know, if one person kills two, then the next person wants to kill three and kind of top the other one somehow to get heard. Is bad attention better than no attention at all?
Absolutely. But what I have to go, and I think the media plays a part, mm-hmm. but what I have to go back to is the Centers for Disease Control just completed a 20-year study on adversive childhood experiences. And what they found was that in early childhood, 0 to 5, children who had experienced bad things, child abuse, neglect, domestic violence, those children were much more likely to be violent, substance abusers, have mental health problems, to have all kinds of negative outcomes in adulthood, including some very serious health problems in adulthood.
But, you know, there's a point here, sorry to interrupt, but there's a point here that, okay, this happened, but this is where we need to step in. I mean, I don't think their whole life should be colored by what someone else did to them. I mean, there is help available, there's a way to get help and heal. I mean, you know, we can't give the power over always to the abuser, so how can we help, you know, change that fact? I mean, you can't say to someone, geez, this happened to you, so therefore there goes your life. I mean, you know, we need to step in somehow. And I know this is, of course, what you do and certainly what you talk about a lot. But as a society, why isn't help more available?
It's two things. It's a funding issue. Mm. But more than that, it's a focus on prevention. And having services available, you know, the other part of that research is that children that get help don't have those negative outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the children that we don't get help for. Those are the ones that have the bad outcomes. So the answer is you've got to have more preventive services across the board.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned before the break, Obamacare and the big debate that's going on.
Right.
Well, the focus of Obamacare is prevention.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the kids that are not being covered by health insurance, that don't get the help they need in childhood, will grow up to cost us a whole lot more money and grief as adults.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I mean, that goes across the board with diseases, too. I mean, the sooner get something checked, the better it is, because it's easier to take care of it than have it full-blown and end up in the emergency room. So, I mean, certainly preventive medicine, whether it be mental health or just physical, is always a good thing and the perfect place to start. So we certainly need more of that, no question. I'm going to change the subject just a little bit because of the terrorist attack in Kenya, which is certainly a terrorist attack. What makes a terrorist? Now, they're talking that some of these kids were from Minnesota. They're not sure. But what makes a terrorist? And why are they just wreaking havoc around the world and shoot? I mean, you know, that's so horrendous. 60-something people. I mean, that's just unimaginable. What makes somebody be a terrorist and want to kill that many people or any people?
Well, it's interesting that you ask that, because I'm working on my next book, and it is comparing mass murderers in the United States with terrorists around the world, and what are the common factors in their background. And for some terrorists, some parts of the Islamic culture accepts mistreatment of women, beating women, maltreating women as okay. And in those homes, I have a person that I'm working with in the Middle East. In those homes, those are going to be the boys that are more susceptible to being radicalized and becoming terrorists that can hurt other people. If you're raised to believe it's okay to hurt other people, you're going to grow up to believe it's okay to hurt other people.
So what do women have to do with that?
Well, in some cultures, it's okay to beat women, to even kill women. And some of the Middle Eastern cultures, the mistreatment of women is very allowed and very acceptable. Shame killings, honor killings of women. And so boys grow up seeing that it's okay for their fathers to harm their mothers, which sets up a dynamic from early childhood that my father can't possibly do anything wrong, therefore hurting other people is okay. And they grow up believing that hurting other people is okay.
Okay. Well, I mean, that happens in other countries, so we can't even do anything about that. I mean, does that happen here? I mean, you know, maybe as a global village, we could maybe help that other countries. But does that happen here? I mean, there's homegrown terrorists. Do they hate their families, too? Or, you know, are they looking for a family?
That's what I'm writing this book about. Mm. I've gone back in the histories of these folks and the ones that have committed mass murder. Now, they don't all fit the profile. Some of them have never committed a violent act at all. But these are the ones that are severely mentally ill and have fallen through the cracks.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the problem. Severely mentally ill. That's why this Gallup poll is an interesting one, that it's mental. Our mental health system is the problem and the reason for all this gun and all this violence. And I think also that there's a huge incentive to be seen, to somehow get that huge attention, even if you're dead, that you never got in life, which
Absolutely.
We give. So, I mean, I think that you know, I think the media has to cover it on one hand, and I think maybe we should do it without saying their name. Maybe if we don't show their smiling face all over the place, you know, after the fact. I mean, that's just really not good. I mean, there's, you know, we have to draw a line between giving out information and giving out some sort of almost like this, you know, you're a big star sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Congratulations. I mean, every time in the last week I've put on the, you know, online, you see this guy's smiling face. They have this same photo. Why are we seeing that? He's not a star.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a problem. I think that everybody has some responsibility there. Your blog is terrific. I am on it as we speak. And it's in Psychology Today. And you have wonderful things here. So there's lots of great early intervention, key to stopping gun violence, how tragic was averted at Oregon High School. I'd like to hear about that. Violence, expression, explosion in the intersection of multiple disorders, who is dangerous, who is not, domestic violence. Okay, all this kind of really interesting. The surprising cost of ignoring poverty. I want to read that one because I think that there's something to connect in all of that poverty, right? I mean, there's some connection between poverty and violence. So for those that think there is no connection, there is, right?
Right. And if we don't have systems in place to take care of those that are less fortunate than we are, that will rise up to bite us in the butt sooner or later.
Absolutely. So we really got to pay attention. I mean, all these things should be forefront on everyone's, because how our society functions is really an example of all who we are. And you say we'll come back to bite us in the butt if we ignore these very important things. Dr. Kathy Sievert, great joining me. Thank you for joining me today. Great interview. Everybody go on Shannon's Corner through WTBQ, and there is a link to her website and to the Psychology Today blog, which has wonderful articles. Dr. Kathy Sievert, again, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today. Interesting information. We really have to all pay attention because we are all in this together. And for the next generation, we need to make it better. So pay attention. Pay attention to your kids. And if your teachers, definitely pay attention to the kids at school. We do have to wrap it up for today. But until next time, don't forget to make good choices.